What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You're listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
What is happening, podcast people? I am actually on a plane right now to the beautiful city of London, United Kingdom, but more on that in a moment. I have to tell you, if this is your first time here, we talk to people who are involved in independent music, who care about it in a deep way, whether it's documenting, playing it, whatever, as long as it's involved with the punk, hardcore, DIY stuff that we all love. Maybe it's a little indie rock, maybe a little emo, maybe you're an author, whatever it is. As long as we have that core component that connects us to the thing that we care about so much. That's what's important to me, and I know it's important to you. And is important to our guest. His name is Mr. Brian Audley. He is the guitarist from Incendiary, and I'm probably saying his last name wrong. Audley? But regardless, he will correct me and let me know that I've done this the wrong way. But regardless, I love Incendiary. I am a longtime fan just of everything that they do. Like when they release a new record or new songs, I am fully in, fully listening, dissecting the lyrics, looking at the album art, just the whole thing. It makes me feel like a, you know, 16-year-old kid poring over Gamora Season Ends or whatever. So I had to have Brian on because I had the vocalist Brendan on two previous episodes. I was like, you know what? I want to round this out. I want to collect all the band members, so to speak. So Brian was kind enough on the promotion of their newest record that just came out on Closed Casket Activities. It's like What You Need to Know About Pain or something along those lines. But, you know, I mean, you can, you're smart. You can easily find the new Incendiary record on all streaming platforms. I was a super fan and, of course, pre-ordered the record immediately. Once they announced it, got the email, boom, dove right in. So we settle a debate. I don't know if I'd call it a debate, but Brian and I talk about the Mount Rushmore of Long Island hardcore, because that's, you know, that's what you do on these sort of these podcasts and what have you. But Brian, great hang. I really enjoy him as a human being. And like I said, check out the new Incendiary record, because holy moly, it is quite potentially, for sure, going to be on my top 10 list. I don't know exactly what number it's going to land at, because, you know, there's many months of this year to transpire. You, if you want to support the show for free, it only takes you 30 seconds of your time. You can leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, or you can leave a rating on the Spotify platform. Those are the best ways for the visibility of the show to spike. And I have seen that happen. And I really appreciate you, the listener, who have done this. And if you haven't done this, like honestly, like less than 5% of you do this, that listen on a week-to-week basis. So I just implore you to do that. And you can always email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. Love to correspond with all of you kind people out there, whether it's show ideas, whether it's like sponsorship inquiries, whether it's like, hey, I just want you to check out my band, whatever it is. All that stuff comes into my inbox, and I greatly appreciate that. Like I mentioned at the top of the episode, I am headed over to the United Kingdom. I first of all want to specifically announce I'm helping the Outbreak Fest team launch their very own podcast, which I am incredibly, incredibly thankful that they trusted me to kind of, you know, put this out in the world. And it's not me hosting it. I mean, I am hosting some of the live chats that are happening over at the Outbreak Fest, which is why I am traveling out to London, like I mentioned at the top of the show. But there's going to be, you know, artist on artist interviews. There's just going to be interesting people having interesting conversations that are related to the Outbreak Fest. So I will include a show link in the, or a link in the show notes, as it were, for you to check out the first episode that we released with Joey from Koyo and Ryan from One Step Closer, having a, I would call it an artist on artist interview. Basically just kind of setting them up with some fun questions. They bounce back and forth with each other. It's a really, really great hang, and honestly something that, you know, it does exist in the podcast space, but I think for the, you know, hardcore slash punk slash hip hop adjacent podcasts, like no one really does it like this, you know? So anyways, I'm very excited about that. So dive in there, and I'm really excited. I'll be doing, gosh, 16 interviews over the course of the weekend. The stage that they have given me is, I'm pretty excited to see it. I haven't seen it in real life as of yet, but yeah, literally traveling right now as we speak on Wednesday. So I'm so excited because Outbreak was an amazing festival that I got to be a part of last year. And just watching bands in this environment is really, really thrilling and exciting. So can't wait to do that. But yeah, let's talk to Brian from Incendiary right now. I was reflecting on our relationship, and I'm almost positive that you and I were just like internet friends initially, like many of us. But then I always do feel this kinship with people who probably it's like, I would say mid 30s and above, because I think generationally speaking, we were the last people to experience pre-internet versus like living on the internet, which is where we all are now. Yeah. And, like, do you think about that? Like, just that idea where it's like, even if it's in the infancy of the internet, where it's like, oh, dude, Bridge Nine Board's popping off or whatever. But like, do you think about that kind of, I guess, generational shift where it's like, oh, kids, that they've had the internet ever since they were children?
I do. I think about that a lot, actually. Actually, both things that you said, I completely agree with. The internet thing, I do think about that a lot. I've said it before, too, where, you know, I feel kind of fortunate that we are this generation that kind of knows what life was like before and also has the benefits and I guess baggage in some ways that comes with, you know, life after the internet being so ubiquitous and universally used. Because like you said, yeah, I mean, generations now, you grew up having it and not, you don't even know what it's like to like not know things, you know, like I remember when if I couldn't figure out or remember who sang a particular song or who, you know, what other movie this actor was in, I would just have to like sit there and not know that. Whereas now I can get that answer in a second, right?
So, yeah, just the idea that you would sit there with your friends or whoever you're having a discussion with and really go through it for like 10 minutes and still not have an answer.
Yeah. And you just have to accept that and live with that. And hopefully that answer finds you someday. It's just, even at that level, I think it's, you know, I do think about that. And then the other thing you said about, you know, of being a certain age and still involved in punk and hardcore and what else, you know, feeling like you kind of just know them already. Like I've thought about that also. And I think it's just kind of like a mutual respect. And I think about that with people I see at shows where, you know, maybe I've never formally met them before or formally been introduced, but at a certain point you're just like, okay, we know each other. We're both still around. We've been in the same room and seen each other for, you know, 10, 15, going on 20 years in some cases. Like, we're cool. We don't need an introduction. We're just peers and we're both still in this stuff. It's a mutual respect.
I like the way that you put that. Because I agree with you completely, especially too, where it's like, there are certain people where it's, once you have seen them enough kind of around, you just, even if you don't know them to your point, you already feel that bond and you can immediately just go up to them and be like, hey, so we don't know each other, but we do, like we have a million friends and like, why not? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like we have enough stuff in common to talk about that we've gained over the last 10, 15, 20 years. So we might as well be.
Right. Exactly.
I know you personally, were you actually born and raised in Long Island, or was that a transplant nature at some point?
No, I'm pretty sure all of us are born and raised on Long Island.
Okay.
Yeah. I was born in Bayshore, New York, in Suffolk County. Lived there until about sixth grade. And then did my middle school, high school years in Center Reach, New York, which I guess the closest landmark I can give for that is Stony Brook University. Stony Brook's getting a lot of attention now with Koyo popping off and riding for that hard. But
right.
I'm born and raised in Long Island. My parents still live there. I lived in Brooklyn for the last almost 10 years. Maybe this year will be my 10th. But I still, have a lot of pride and a lot of connection with Long Island. My folks are still out there and, summer's coming up and that's where I like to be.
Yeah. Oh, of course. First of all, does anybody and still refer to Long Island as, I know jokingly it was referred to a Strong Island. Like clearly that is some dumb thing that's said at some point, but it just always sticks in my brain. But does anybody call it that?
Like within punk and hardcore specifically, like kind of like maybe with like a wink and a nod sarcastically. But like you'll definitely see like, a CrossFit gym or like,
right.
I don't know, like a jujitsu gym or something like that, like using that non-ironically for sure.
Right. Okay, cool. It just really washed over me right now. I'm like, wait, why the hell do people call it Strong Island at some point? But like now I kind of like, oh yeah, that's right. Now it all comes flooding back. So so what was the family structure like as you were growing up? Like mom and dad in the house, brothers and sisters?
Yeah. Mom and dad around in the picture, still in the picture, have a great relationship. One younger brother who's 3 years younger than me, who for a minute kind of, followed my path into music and punk and hardcore. And we had a few things in common and then kind of quickly took a left turn and decided whatever his big brother wasn't into wasn't cool anymore and got into his own stuff. But we're still cool. He's been a supporter too, where like he'll come out to our local shows, even though he doesn't really care about the music. And, he knows the things that are important to me, and always does a killer job of coming up with like very cool and unique, gifts for me based on that, like, why would he know that? Right. Like, I think, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, he got me an original copy of the Silent Majority LP, Life of a Spectator, the only one,
right.
Where like at the time, like that's such like a niche thing to know somebody's into, right? Like, especially someone that's not involved in punk and hardcore. He just knew how much I liked that band and tracked down a cool, a copy for me from some European distro or something. And then I guess I'll just keep going on this. This year for Christmas, he got me what I can only describe as like a box full of like old Long Island hardcore, like ephemera and flyers. He found some guy that was like selling it on eBay, like to this guy, probably a box of his old garbage for all intents and purposes, but it's just filled with his flyers, posters, zines, photos from like all this 90s Long Island stuff that like, to 99.9% of the world would think it's garbage. And I'm just like obsessed with this thing and need to try to find a way to document it all.
Right. I mean, to your point, just that ephemera, like especially when you are looking at it through the lens of the stuff that either predated you or was like right around the time you started to go to shows where it's like, oh dude, I wish I was like, 6 months younger. I could have gone to that show or whatever.
Yeah. It's like exactly that. It's like all the shows that like, I wish I could have gone to. And there's like a small degree of overlap from stuff that I was actually at and now have, some kind of physical artifact of it. But yeah, it was really cool. And just that kind of just illustrates the point. Like, he doesn't, my brother rules and he doesn't really, he doesn't have the same connection to the music as I do anymore, but he's still supportive, knows I'm into it and knows, the things he can, the things I'll get excited about.
Right. Yeah. He's like, I know it's going to get Brian stoked up with this, box of what most people would define as trash. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, this is great. Yeah, hours.
He'll come to shows too. And he's like a good sport about it.
That's cool.
Our cost of living record release, which was about 10 years ago at this point. We had to do it not had to, but it got moved last minute. But we did it at the Sable Republican Club, which was a really cool DIY venue we had there for a minute. But you know, it's a small, sweaty, packed, like sweltering hot VFW, and he wanted to come check out the show. He walked in, took like one look at the room, and comes up to me. He's like, "What time are you guys playing?" I'm like, you know, it's this band, and then another band, and then us. He's like, "All right, I'm gonna go listen to the Knicks game in my car. Like, text me when you're going on." So he was down to support us, but you know, he has his limits.
Yeah, of course. I love that. And what kind of kid did you find yourself being as you were growing up? Like, did you care about school? Were you into sports? Like, what were you gravitating towards?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I was into school. You know, I did well in school. I definitely was into sports. I'm a big guy for anybody that doesn't know. So, you know, I was courted a lot for sports.
Sure.
Mainly basketball and football because of my size and my height. But, you know, honestly, like I didn't really connect with either of those sports. I kind of did it because, you know, I was giving it a try and trying things out. But lacrosse was the game that really connected with me. I played that all through middle school, all through high school. Didn't play in college, but, you know, at that point I was kind of already, you know, thinking about and starting my music journey. And yeah, I still love the game.
Right. And now that explains why you have lacrosse shorts. Like as far as incendiary is concerned.
Oh yeah, that was a pure passion project. Right. Yeah, dude, like two ships crossing in me and that company kind of found each other, and it was perfect. The company was called Relax Lacrosse, and I saw them on Instagram because they made like a custom pair of like VOD, Vision of Disorder lacrosse shorts, and I was like, okay, like this is like the intersection of like two of the only things I care about. So we struck up a correspondence, are into a lot of the same stuff, and then yeah, partnered up on those shorts. And it's like, yeah, I mean, the impetus there was like, I just want one pair of these for myself to exist so I can have them and wear them, and if other people are down, even better. But yeah, it was a fun little project, and I think all those shipped out pretty recently, so people should have started getting them.
Yeah, I like it when you can connect, because I know especially when you are, you know, younger and starting bands, and there's that idea where, and it's to a lesser degree now because everybody's world kind of crashes into each other, but the separation of church and state, whether it's like, oh, I can't really like blend in too much of my real life into like my hardcore life because, you know, oh, like sports are so different than hardcore or whatever. But, you know, the fact that everybody can do anything, and I just like to trace that back to where that came from, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it was definitely like, I don't know if I would call it like a conflict, but like, I mean, I was into music and into hardcore and discovered hardcore like very early just through circumstance. And, you know, maybe we can get into that later, but, you know, as it related with sports, like, you know, at the time I was in high school and playing sports and stuff, it's like late 90, like call it like 1998 through 2002. And mm-hmm. like heavy music in general was kind of like a little more popular, especially among the, you know, quote unquote jock types. Like I'd had plenty of friends on my lacrosse team that were stoked if I put on Hatebreed in the locker room. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Pantera and Slayer. And so like, you know, I had some, you know, I wasn't totally alone, and it wasn't totally church and state. There was some overlap there, but you know, I never really felt the need to hide it or like, you know, have my other group of friends. Like in high school, like I didn't really have, I was a just like kind of like a spectator with hardcore and the shows I was going to. Like I didn't have any friends really at the shows or at the scene or in the scene or, you know, doing bands or anything at that point. I was just a straight up like fan. You know, going to shows and checking stuff out on my own. Right. Maybe I had one or two friends that, you know, liked Hatebreed or something that I could convince to come with me. But, other than that, it was really just kind of me out there trying to find all this stuff.
Right. Yeah. I do like that when you can bring stuff to the table that your friends get stoked on, and you know, in your head, you're just like, okay, you're never going to go to a Hatebreed show. You're never going to care about this, but like, you know, you can clearly pump some iron with this or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Like we would, there'd be enough crossover. Be like, all right, so like, how about this Poison the Well CD? Like, you know, this, it's heavy, it's got screaming, it's moshy. And then I'm like, all right, you're into that. Like, how about Converge? And that was a little too artsy for some people. So that turned them
totally
off. But, you know, there was enough that, you know, I could usually convince somebody and that to join me and maybe put them onto something new.
Right. I do also like that you're always testing the boundaries as well, where it's like, yeah, okay, exactly. Yeah, this, all right, I know this friend will like this type of music up to a point, and then once it crosses this, this won't happen. And so, yeah, it's all about finding those limits.
Yeah, exactly.
So did you, as you were, like you said, exposed to, you know, heavy music somewhat early, and I know, because I've seen you articulate in other interviews of, you know, it's like listening to heavy music, like you didn't know it. And plus, like, no kid has a concept of a scene. You're just like, oh yeah, dude, Korn, Deftones, you hate breed. Yeah. Like, it's all the same. It's all
same,
heavy.
Same stuff. Yep.
Yeah.
I thought anything that, like, anybody that had like a real CD and had screaming, that they were all the same level, you know. Like, I thought Earth Crisis was the same as like Sepultura, was the same as Pantera, was the same as Hatebreed, you know. Like they sound sonically similar. They have a CD I can get at a store. Like, they must all be playing the same type of like gigantic arena shows. And it wasn't until later where I figured out there was a bit more dynamics within that.
Right. And that idea too, that you, like, to you at that time, it's just level of exposure where you're like, oh, maybe this band, you know, I'm able to see on MTV when they actually played music videos or whatever, versus this band where I know they're not, because, you know, they're just not as popular or whatever. So it's like, that's how you kind of base your level of understanding. It wasn't so much like, oh, there's no way that this band is ever going to be played on because they don't even have a music video or whatever.
It was all the same to me. Like, anything could have, you know, either one could have replaced the other. It was all the same level. I didn't realize that there was like a local band and like a touring hardcore band and then like an Ozfest band. I thought it was just kind of like all the same.
Right. And what drew, because I'm guessing prior to that, like, you were probably maybe just, I guess, like listening to the radio, listening to kind of whatever is around you.
Mm-hmm. Well, hold on, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask it. And so, like, what attracted you to the heavy stuff, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I was, you know, definitely into, like, probably every person my age, like Green Day, Nirvana, right? Like, loud punk influenced rock was like on the radio, and I was exposed to it. And, you know, I love those bands. And then I started getting into slightly heavier stuff, Metallica, Slayer, Pantera. And again, like, that stuff was like, it definitely wasn't mainstream, but like, that was on like regular ass, like, radio in my parents' car. You know what I mean? So I'd hear this stuff and then just kind of be looking for more. And that, like, kind of like discovery aspect and that looking for more was like really like a lot of the fun of it for me too. You know, I liked having to kind of seek stuff out and try to, like, you know, just find any scrap of information, a song, a comp, a flyer, a shirt, like whatever it was, just like learning more and like discovering more about this stuff and going deeper. And I think, you know, I referenced earlier kind of just like circumstances, but, you know, I just happened to live and grow up in Center Reach, like walking distance from this independent local record store that carried punk, hardcore, local hardcore, had flyers for hardcore shows, were giving out, you know, free victory comps at the door. That really kind of like accelerated my discovery and my involvement and got me into stuff, you know, and gave me access to stuff in a pre-internet Long Island in, you know, mid to late 1990s that, you know, I otherwise wouldn't have had. So I was very much, I owe a lot to just having that resource that close to me at that age.
Mm-hmm. And no one can really describe in the same way that, you know, you can't describe the power of playlisting now as you can, where the power of comps, where it was like, yeah, victory style and, you know, Fat Records comps. It's like, that is what, you know, quote unquote moved units and got people exposed to bands. It was crazy.
100%. Yeah. And like, yeah, two notes on that. The victory ones in particular.
I just mentioned, so crucial.
Yeah. I just mentioned this recently because, my other band Soldiers did a show with Earth Crisis very recently, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, at St. Vitus here in Greenpoint, in Brooklyn. And I was thinking about it and I was like, I love Earth Crisis, literally one of my favorite bands ever. And my exposure to Earth Crisis and hardcore at large was a victory sampler that I got at this record store, which was called None of the Above Records. You know, free thing I picked up at the door. The first track was Earth Crisis, Morality Dictates. And at that time, I had never heard a song before that was like 100% screamed vocals the entire song. Like, it blew my fucking mind, dude. Like, I didn't know you could do that. I was like, holy shit, is this, you're allowed to just like scream like that the entire song?
Right.
So that comp in particular, and you know, I tried to track down the name of it because it wasn't one of the victory styles. It was like, you know, Summer of 97 sampler or something like that. But
sure.
Yeah. I tracked down the cover just because I had to know and just had to kind of scratch that curiosity. But yeah, man, like those comps and the victory ones in particular, were super formative and really kind of, you know, got things in front of me that otherwise wouldn't have come until much later.
And it also helps you define like define what you like about heavy sounding bands, where it's like, yeah, okay, here's this, like, you know, I'm using victory as a, like, the first victory style. It was like, I liked, like, personally, like, Guilt and Dead Guy, but then I also like Strife and, you know, Earth Crisis, yeah, whatever. But I was just drinking from the fire hose. I liked it all. I was like, okay, besides Hi-Fi and the Roadburners, like, everything else was pretty sick. But then as you grow older, that's when you start to place things in context of like, oh, actually, like, you know, Guilt was kind of a weird band. And like, you know, this one was so different from this one, but you didn't know at that time.
Yeah, no idea. And that comp in particular, again, I mentioned, I looked it up recently in the track listing, like, tough sell, because the track list on that after that one opening Earth Crisis song was a lot of hoops to jump through to get to other stuff I might be into. It was like all the kind of like other victory bands, like front loaded after Earth Crisis, your Donuts, Baby Gopal, all that stuff. Like the stuff that,
totally,
you know, no disrespect to anybody involved, but like, you know, I found myself skipping on subsequent victory styles. That was all up front. So like I had to get through all that to get to the Integrity, Snapcase, Strifes, and the rest of the stuff that I would, you know, eventually, you know, become some of my favorite bands.
Rockabilia.com is the place that you need to pull out your web browser, whether it's on your computer or on your phone. It is an amazing website that gives you officially licensed merch from, I don't know, like 9 million bands, it feels like. But first and foremost, after you have pulled up the website and after you've put some stuff in your cart, you use the promo code 100 words or less that lets them know that they heard about their business from this very show. And why I love Rockabilia is, you know, whether you're into Slipknot, The Beatles, Bring Me the Horizon, you know, Comeback Kid, I don't care what it is, you will be able to find it on their website. And like I said, it's all officially licensed. So that means the band gets paid. It's a virtuous cycle here because you get a discount code. The business, the independent business that supports so many bands and artists, gets to continue doing what they do, and everybody wins in this scenario. So go to rockabilia.com, use the promo code 100 words or less. And I absolutely love the fact that they support this show because I love this company. So rockabilia.com, thank you for your continued support. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno.
And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
As you started to, you know, like go to shows of a more independent minded nature, I mean, like, you know, you were obviously around the time where, you know, VOD and a lot of the Long Island bands were, you know, playing shows in that area and were playing very, very large shows. Were you, were you scared? Was it exciting? It was probably a combination of all those things. Like, what were the emotions that as you started to kind of interact with the scene on a more, direct level?
Yeah. It was all of that. I mean, again, it's kind of circumstantial, like, the VFW in Center Reach, the town I grew up in that I could walk to, because again, I'm in middle school or early high school. I don't have a car. I can't drive. Like, they were doing like big, I mean, looking back, like big fucking shows. Like the first show I ever went to there was like Shutdown, Glassjaw, One for One, this other Long Island band, Motive, who like really stuck out to me among all that night. And it just blew my mind. And like, I really liked that VFW did a ton of other shows. I saw Silent Majority there. I saw Hatebreed there. I saw Indecision and Sick of It All there. So I got, again, just kind of like a product of the circle of where I lived. I was able to just get myself to these things without having to rely on my parents dropping me off or transportation. But, I really liked the feeling of like, I'm doing something somewhere I'm not supposed to be doing it in my town, right? Like, cause this is like a Friday or Saturday night. I'm in, I don't know, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, when like nobody does shit on Friday nights in seventh, eighth, ninth grade. Maybe you're playing PlayStation at your buddy's house, or like, you know, I don't know, getting into trouble and like prank calling people or something, or at least that's what we used to do. And I'm like, man, like I'm at the VFW seeing some of like the sickest bands I've ever heard in my life. Like, and it's totally a secret. Like, there's a bowling alley across the street where like, I know for sure somebody I go to school with is having a birthday party there right now. And I'm across the street watching people like tear each other apart to Hatebreed. Like, that was so cool to me. And it felt like I was in on this thing that nobody else knew about. And it was all for me, not in like an exclusionary, you know, gatekeeping way, the way people say it now, but it's like, man, I found my thing. And like, you guys, you know, have fun with all that this weekend. Like, I'm doing this.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like that, that you felt like you were, especially too, once you started to really get immersed. And even if you played in your first band and played a show outside of the state or outside of the city, people, you couldn't even explain that to your peers. They were like, what are you talking about? What does that mean? You went to tour.
Yeah. Yeah, like you went to a show. Like, what do you mean? You went to the city and went to a concert? Like, nah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, totally. So did you get, as you started to go to shows and stuff, did you get taken by the idea of playing in a band right away? Or was that something that, like, had guitar already been present in your life, prior to that?
Yeah, definitely. Like, playing in a band was like always the goal. It was like, okay, how do I get myself there, right? Like, how do I get in a band with very modest expectations? Like, all I want is a band that people will sing along to and mosh to at a show. That was it. I started off on bass. I think like most, maybe consider it like a lower barrier to entry when there's only four strings, and I thought it would be easier for me to learn. So I started off on bass. I had a couple, formal lessons at a guitar shop that were mostly me just like bringing in songs I liked and the teacher like showing me how to play them. But, it gave me enough, and I was still very reliant on like, tabs, like tablature books and stuff like that to learn. And then I don't know what really made the switch. I was like, all right, like I want to be like doing more and like making more sound. So eventually I kind of evolved into guitar, got a guitar, and then, you know, spent a lot of time in the same way, like just learning other songs, learning tabs. Like Guitar World magazine in particular was like a big resource for me, because they would, you know, every month in an issue, they'd give you four or five tabs of a song of, you know, random choosing. And that's all I had to work with for a month. So I would spend the month learning those songs, whether I liked the songs or not, by the way. And, you know, until the next issue came out, I'd have four more to learn. So that's kind of, you know, how I started playing guitar and like learned how to play.
Right. As a person who only really minorly picked up guitar, like just those tabs were so crucial to feel like you were actually making progress on something.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like, I know how the song is supposed to sound, cause I've heard it on the radio. So I can kind of hear when it's like not right or where I need to be, but it's crazy how much of that stuff is like still stored in my like core memories. Like I still know how to play the solo to like Santeria, and I barely like Sublime, you know what I mean, just because that was one of the songs that like I had the tab of in Guitar World and spent, you know, days, weeks, whatever, figuring out until the next issue came.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. So like you were saying, as you were, you know, going to shows and wanting to play in bands and all of that sort of stuff there, where did you start to find like people to play with, obviously from shows? Cause like you said, you weren't really finding that in your school or other, you know, peer groups, so to speak. So I'm guessing that's where you kind of found people to play with.
Actually, in contrast to what I said earlier, the first people I started playing with were friends that I had played sports with, believe it or not. My one buddy, Mike, me and him were in a jazz band together in middle school. And he still does music professionally too. He was in This Is Hell for a little bit playing drums. He was in Endwell for a bit playing drums, and he's part of a new band now called Extinction AD that rips too. But he was the first person I ever really like played with, like in middle school jazz band. Like I played bass guitar, which was cool, cause I got to play guitar on the school clock once in a while. And I don't know, I was warming up with like a Rage Against the Machine riff or something, and he kind of like picked up on it, and we were like, oh shit, like we both like this stuff. And then eventually me, him, and a couple other guys started our first, you know, metal bands in probably about like 10th grade or so, mostly covers, and eventually started doing some original stuff. But yeah, those are all guys I did go to school with. Those are some of the guys I was like, all right, we got enough in common here. You like Hatebreed, like I'll come to a Killswitch Engage show. Like we had enough in common that, you know, it made sense.
Sure. That's really cool. And was there sort of a life path opening itself up for you in regards to, you know, like what you're going to do for a job, and like, were you going to go to college, and, you know, were you going to follow along in your mom or dad's footsteps? Was there any of that going on?
Like a little, like it was always about like sustainability for me. Like I recognized from a pretty early age, or pretty early on rather, that like, this is like one of the only things I like really give a fuck about. And the way hardcore was positioned to me at that time, like I'm like, this is not like a career thing. Like it's just something I want to be part of my life for as long as possible. So my like plan, quote unquote, was like, all right, I want to go to college. I want to kind of like get that out of the way, so to speak, and have something in my back pocket. And then after that, spend time doing music as much as I can, for a little while. And that wasn't, and that turned into, you know, I was roadieing for my friend's band, This Is Hell, for a while. And that was my first kind of experience right after college. Like, you know, during college, I was definitely becoming more active socially in Long Island hardcore, and meeting more people and, you know, having friends at shows, friends that were in bands, and just kind of starting to like get, you know, pulled into the whole, you know, quote unquote scene of it all, which again, before I had only just been a fan. I was there to see the show, grab a t-shirt and go home. But then I really started being socialized. So by the time I was wrapping up college, you know, opportunities to tour whether it being roadieing with This Is Hell or eventually, you know, starting a band with those guys that were doing it a little more professionally and a little more seriously, or a lot more professionally, a lot more serious, were starting to surface. So I was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, you know, I got the degree in my back pocket. Now I can go, you know, people want to travel after college. Like, I'm going to get to do that with music, with hardcore, with my friends.
Right. Yeah. This is your backpacking around Europe.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. This is where I'm going to find myself.
Yeah.
When, so like you said, as these, you know, this world started to open up as far as other opportunities in regards to just like, oh yeah, I'll hop on the road and, you know, do all that sort of stuff. Was touring, I guess, what you thought it was going to be, or was it drastically different than any expectations you had?
It was pretty much like I thought it was going to be, being honest. And my experience again was mostly at the time, like, roadieing for This Is Hell, who, this is like 2008, 2009-ish, may have 2007 to 2009 or so, when like bands toured hard. And This Is Hell was like the best example of that. This is when, like, you know, Modern Life Is War and Blacklisted and This Is Hell, like these bands were fucking road dogs, like 8 to 10 months a year on the road, right? And I was in for all that. I was doing all that. And yeah, I mean, it was a great experience, but pretty much what I expected. You know, it was almost all sleeping on floors, all, you know, $5 a day buyouts, all that stuff. But I loved it. It was awesome. I was around the only thing I really cared about, all the time.
Right. That's amazing. Because, you know, Incendiary, I know you obviously played in Soldiers before that. Did the Soldiers thing just come up because obviously of your connection with This Is Hell, where it's just like, oh, I guess we'll ask Brian to play in this?
Yeah, well, it was more of like me and Rick from This Is Hell and Soldiers. Like, we were always on the same page with a lot of like what like wasn't very popular music at the time. Like a lot of like older New York hardcore, not older New York hardcore, but like Madball, VOD, Buried Alive, All Out War, which are like, I think, a little more popular now than they were back in 2008 or 2007, 2009, which is awesome because those are all great bands. But we were like always kind of like, man, this stuff is so sick. We should do something like that. And yeah, we were around each other all the time. And then eventually made it happen. And it was always just kind of like a fun side project thing. You know, whenever we could get together, we would. Around This Is Hell's schedule. And then, you know, we ended up doing an LP that we never really thought we'd do. We did a degree of touring ourselves, a couple, you know, 2 week things here and there. But that was like really my first experience in doing a band, like, quote unquote, for real. And definitely my first experience writing a full record, a record that I'm still proud of. Like, I've, you know, I mentioned we just dusted it off to play with Earth Crisis a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I'm still proud of a lot of that material. I think it still sounds good and still sounds, you know, of fresh enough with what everybody, you know, is into now.
Yeah. Especially too, when you are playing something that, what, you know, might not sonically fit in at the time. And then, I mean, music is all cyclical, so it's like it goes in and out of fashion at certain points. And, you know, there, it definitely, you couldn't have, you know, toured as hard as those other bands you were naming during that time, because there wasn't really opportunities like that. But it's like now you could be like, oh yeah, like we probably could have played a few more shows now, because it's a little more, you know, in vogue, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rick was like, Rick wanted to sing for a band, and he's such like a presence and just like force that I'm like, I would love to be in a band where Rick just gets to sing. And, you know, right. While this Is Hell was a great band and doing their thing with their sound, like, I knew Rick wanted to do something a little more, you know, like Terror and First Blood and bands like that, that were going on at the time. And I was all in for it. I love that stuff too.
Please check out evilgreed.net. They are a independently owned operation over in Berlin, Germany, that supplies web store solutions for bands and record labels. But what's important to you is the fact that they ship merch to you. It's obvious, right? But no joke, evilgreed.net. And please use this promo code 100 words. It lets them know that this very podcast sent them, and they are focused on shipping merch to the United States of America.
And what makes this company very special is the fact that they don't open their floodgates to everybody. They work with a very specially hand-picked roster of bands and record labels. Like, I'm just going to throw some record labels out there, and it'll give you the vibe, whether it's Profound Lore Records, Closed Casket Activity, Death Wish, End Hits Records, Maggot Stomp, Sargent House. I could go on, but obviously you can go to the website. You can see what's up. I just love what they do. They will send you merch, vinyl, whatever it is you order from them. And I know what you're thinking. You heard me at the very top of the ad being like, oh, I don't know, man, Berlin, Germany, that's terrifying. No, it is not, because the shipping rates are very advantageous for us right now here in America. I've ordered from them before, and they've gotten me stuff in around a week. It's so easy to do. So again, evilgreed.net, and use the promo code 100words and get you 10% off of your entire order. Thank you very much, Evil Greed, for your continued support.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I mean, Incendiary, for obviously as long as you guys have existed, you've always been really deliberate about the choices that you've made in regards to, you know, touring, playing shows, because you guys all have, you know, lives outside of the band, and you've all, you know, committed to things in a real life that is not going to be able to get you out for 7 to 9 months out of the year. And I know that was an evolving discussion that you guys were having as the band was, you know, starting to get some steam and some heat. Was that, just for you personally, was that kind of difficult to balance those ideas of like, oh, we're going to have to say no to these tours and that sucks because we can't go out? Or was that something that was relatively easy for you to say no to? I mean, and I know like saying no to opportunities always feels weird, but how did you kind of, I guess, sort through that on your own?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, the quote unquote strategy hasn't really changed since the beginning of the band. And, you know, it wasn't that hard at the time because, you know, Incendiary started when all of us, or most of us, had done other bands in similar capacities, like I was doing with Soldiers and traveling with This Is Hell, like, and were, you know, kind of like closing that chapter and being like, all right, like, we're getting jobs, like, we got apartments, we have relationships and commitments at home now. But we still love doing this. We still want to be part of the conversation. We still want to be contributing and playing shows with our friends at home, playing shows with our friends' bands that when they come through Long Island, you know, and just be part of the whole thing. So that was like always kind of the page that everyone was on. It's how do we do as much as possible within these new kind of like life circumstances we're in? And that's still the page we're on now. And, you know, I think, I'm actually glad you asked this, 'cause like, you know, people will tell me frequently, you know, oh, I'm jealous. You guys got it all figured out. I wish we did it your way. I got the Incendiary model. It's so smart. And, you know, I think that the perception of what we do is kind of like based off of our results, which are admittedly very unique, where like, you know, we didn't have a grand plan of like, all right, we're going to do this band and write these songs. And then here's the catch. We're never going to play. Like it wasn't like that. It was internally, the perception is like, how do we do as much as humanly possible and say yes to as much stuff as possible within these, you know, within these confines and guardrails that are around our lives. And that's the page we're still on today. And that's why, you know, it's still working. So, you know, it gets hard, and as the opportunities get cooler, it gets harder. But you know, we're over 15 years into this, believe it or not, and like, you know, I'm grateful we get to do it at all still, and still have people's ears and attention. So, you know, I'm very much at peace with it, and you know, I like the way that it works now. You know, we're not out there 6 to 8 months of the year where things can get, you know, burned out and jaded and You know, you just lose some of the luster of it. Everything we do is like a date circled on the calendar and something we're looking forward and excited to do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to be honest too, I think it really, it is a testament to, like you said, the kind of, you know, not like it was a grand plan, but the plan of the band of existing. I think the crucial part here is continuing to put out music, and that is vital for the particular time in which you were releasing it. Because, you know, you could be, and this is my words, not yours, and this is like no shots against this band, I'm prefacing this, but it's like Guns Up as an example. Like, you know, when they became that band that would just like pop into This Is Hardcore, Sound and Fury, and like play every 2 to 3 years, and people would be excited and go off or whatever. But like, there was no hope of releasing new music. There was nothing that was kind of connected to that besides like, oh, this is a fun opportunity. And of course, take it, super fun. But yep. Because you guys constantly are, you know, sort of, I'm not constantly, but you are continuing to put new stuff out there. I think that's what keeps people engaged. Either people who've been fans of what you've been doing, or alternatively, people who are just tripping across you because it's like, oh, wow, like I saw them at Sound and Fury 2 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, we would still be doing this anyway, I think, is the other thing. Like whether or not people cared about the band at all or as much as they do, I would still be writing heavy hardcore songs and trying to play them live. Like, so, you know, the fact that I've got, you know, 5 or 4 other people that are my best friends that are on that page too, and I get to do it all over the world at this point, it's unbelievable.
Right. Totally. This may be, this is a random aside, but I think something that you would be able to speak on and will be probably difficult for you to quantify, or maybe it'll be easy, but, and I'm sure you've been posed some version of this question, the Mount Rushmore of Long Island hardcore, or it can be Long Island, just like music in general, we don't have to define it as such. Who would you put up there is your own personal, Mount Rushmore. So you got four bands.
Yeah, I got this question. Never really been asked it formally, but I've heard other people ask this question. I'm always kind of critical of the responses. And I should also mention that like I'm coming off of like a big Long Island hardcore pride weekend with the Silent Majority reunions that were just last weekend. So
Yep.
I'm not gonna overthink it for this response, but I think Silent Majority, VOD, Glassjaw.
Yes.
And I'm going to put Backtrack on there because Backtrack is our generation, and they really flew the flag super hard for everybody. They got an entire generation back into it and took it to a level. So like, you know, I don't know, maybe people are expecting a more classical answer to that, but like I'm putting Backtrack in my top four.
No, I you do have to be deliberate in like, you know, classics and things that like personally resonate with you. And then that idea that especially too in this day and age where bands can exist from all over the place. And like, you know, once bands obviously like get to that sort of full time level, they kind of split across the country or what have you, but will the bands that ride for their city, it's like, it's great. And you need to have those generations to be able to do that, you know, like Koyo is doing now and you guys have been doing. And like you said, It's like you could draw that straight line between all those bands and that's exciting.
Yeah. And I think what goes into my answer too is kind of like the impact on like the culture, so to speak, like every band I just mentioned, like they influenced so much and built so much during their time that like you can still hear, see, and feel in everything that's coming out now. That, you know, that weights into my answer too, beyond just like, you know, they have some sick records.
Right. Of course. And this is really random and just a very selfish question personally, but, I presume that you have some interaction with that band Inside from, Long Island. Yeah. I don't know if you ever, that was a band that just like, I mean, no one talks about anymore, but it looms large for, I think, a lot of people that, you know, randomly ran across them in the 90s. And I just like that band was so good.
They were great, man. And beyond just Inside, the bands that came after Inside were some of my favorites too. Blood Red, which was, I think, everybody from Inside minus Mike, the singer, but Tommy from Silent Majority on vocals. that blood red material is some of the best stuff to ever come off Long Island and often overlooked. And then Mike did a band after
Dearly Departed.
Dearly Departed, yeah, man, with Joe Rubino from Tension. And
yep.
Man, I saw that band a ton. And honestly, like at the time, I didn't really get it. But I go back and listen to those records now, especially the LP, Believing in Ghosts. And man, that stuff is so goddamn good. And just like real music. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like real music beyond outside of like, you know, the hardcore stuff. But yeah, man, I have a lot of love for Inside and those musicians and everything that they put out after that, too.
I love that. Yeah, that, I mean, that's a deep, deep cut, but I knew that you would appreciate it. But I agree wholeheartedly. It's like I love it when we feel like we trip across a band that, like you said, I just love the idea, like playing real music, where it's like you feel like you could play that to some random civilian and they would be like, oh, this is really good. Like, you know, yeah. Are they on tour with like 1975 or whatever? It's like, no,
yeah,
this
right. Yeah, exactly. I'm actually sure that. You know, because I mean, even on Long Island in New York, like, you know, if I say Dearly Departed or Blood Red, like, you know, they weren't household names beyond the ex members thing in a lot of cases, but let alone somebody from California. I'm kind of shocked to say, I noticed that as well.
Dude, because the Inside released a couple records, like all their stuff got put out in this label from here in Southern California called Redwood Records. And it was like, for whatever reason, I think they came out here twice and I saw them both times. They toured with Elliot. Oh, wow. And it was one of those things where I was just like, this band is unbelievable. It's like I will always think of they put out one of their 7 inches with like the Intel like computers logo.
Yes.
It's like, of course, nerds like you and I are like, oh, dude, so cool. It's just like, oh my gosh.
Redwood put out the first Blood Red EP too.
Yes, yes.
Records EP, and that's like, to me, that's their best material. And I would encourage anybody that's listening or, you know, hearing about or seeing all the Silent Majority love that's going on the last couple of weeks from Long Island. If you like what you're hearing there, check out Blood Red, the Redwood Records EP.
I agree wholeheartedly. That's great. Putting the focus back on Incendiary, like when, you know, you started to, you know, put out records and start to experience people outside of your proverbial scene paying attention to you, when do you feel like the band for you personally kind of got quote unquote real, you know, where it was like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe that people are paying attention to this thing. Or I can't believe we, you know, get to put out a record and close casket. It doesn't even have to be those two experiences, but you know, when for you, did it kind of like open your eyes up?
Yeah, like I know the exact moment for me. Like
I love it.
Yeah, we played a show on Long Island at this venue called the Black Box Theater in Northport, and the rest of the lineup escapes me at the moment because we played there a number of times. Some combination of Backtrack, The Agent, Sick of Talk. I think these are all bands that we played with a lot at that time. But I remember at that show in particular, we got a reaction for one of our songs that wasn't a cover. Like we used to cover Strife early on and that would kind of like, you know, warm people up to us. But that was it. A lot of the set was like, man, I can't wait till we get to the Strife song. So like people start moving around for this.
Totally.
And then that show, we got a reaction for like one of our own songs. And I was like, oh shit. Like that has never happened before. Like this is like, we're starting to like get somewhere here. That moment in that show, that was the moment.
I love that description because it really does make your brain fold in on itself where your original song, someone like if it's a person that sings along and it like isn't your friend, it's just like you took the time to know this or like you said, get a reaction. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's crazy, man, to think because like we had on our first 7-inch, we had a song called Sinking and it was that song. That was the first time we had a song that was like, we have to close the show with this because it gets a reaction, has a big cool sing along. And, you know, our whole year at the time was built around these Long Island fests that used to happen where that was like the big moment. And it's so crazy that we're still doing this band. And now like people have probably never even heard of that song. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, on that was our hit, so to speak. Like it was like a lifetime ago.
Totally. It's like, yeah, this doesn't even make it in, you know, even if we're playing like a 45 minute set, there's no way this song's getting
not
in here.
Anymore. Like once in a while, we'll throw it in on Long Island if we have like a important show. Like we did it at the Backtrack last show on Long Island. And we'll sprinkle it in here and there. And, you know, it's hard, man, because it's like, you know, it's like a 10 plus year, more than 10, probably 15 year old song at this point. Like, the people that and we're lucky, man. Like the people who are coming to see Incendiary now are like, you know, largely newer fans that got into us on, you know, one of our second or third LP. We are the opposite of a like I liked the demo better band. Like nobody likes the demo. Nobody cares about the demo. Like I don't think anybody even fucking knows we have one. But you know, it doesn't really. A few people know, and I'm always glad to do it because I'm still proud of that song. But like, right. It's not like they're like, oh my God, it's not like Converge playing Saddest Day or something.
Right.
Like, a few old timers who like happen to remember it might be in the house that night.
Right. It gets like a smirk from the back of the room, but
yeah.
That's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It does. Okay. Right. It does okay. But it's like our new shit does like 1,000 times better. So while it is cool, you know, conceptually to tip the cap and respect and honor the old material and the people who've been there since, like, you know, it's not, it doesn't get the mind blowing reaction that, you know, some bands when they play older material get.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. Last couple things I want to hit on was the, you know, when you started to tour overseas and tour in other places that obviously in your wildest dreams, you'd be like, why is this dumb hardcore band being able to play a show in, you know, Japan or Europe or whatever? What was surprising for you about those particular touring experiences? Was it, you know, just obviously like the culture difference or what was surprising for you?
It was surprising to me that we got Incendiary to Europe, honestly, like, and it was all DIY still, like, you know, in a lot of cases we had no business doing some of the touring and being in some of the places we were in, but like, we always had like one thing that was like made the trip worth it. Our first East Coast tour, we got an offer to play Orlando, with someone I'm actually still very good friends with. Shout out my boy, Wes. And we're like, you know what, why not? Like we have a legit promoter in Orlando that's booking us like a quality show. Let's try to make that happen. And, you know, the shows around that are, you know, less than stellar. We couldn't get a show on the entire Eastern Seaboard between Edison, New Jersey and Wilmington, North Carolina to save our lives. But right. We made it happen. We had reason to go. And the same thing in our first West Coast tour, we got on a Sound and Fury in 2011 and it's like, well, that's worth the trip alone. We'll play some shows and it'll be bonus. And the UK was the same thing. Europe was the same thing. We got a UK offer for a show and then we just tried to fill it in with MySpace messages and emails and cobbled together a tour and learned a lot, right? Like doing that stuff and language barriers and getting renting vehicles and transportation and ferries and mainland and all this stuff. Like, We really did it ourselves and didn't really have like a strong demand to be there, but made it happen anyway. So the first one was like, I can't believe we're doing it with this band. This is so crazy and sick. And, you know, Europe and the UK has always been a priority for us. You know, we always try to carve out some of our limited availability and limited time to try to get over there and play and support our records over there and, you know, give people that still reach out to us and want to see us over there, you know, an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And as you were, you know, like doing all of these things with the band, like clearly you were also obviously living your, you know, real life. And like we were talking about off the mic, as far as, you know, pursuing life in the advertising/media yeah. world. Because I know that obviously Brendan feels this way where it's like there is this idea that, you know, your life within the bands is also really weird to most civilians. Yeah. Like, so do you try, like, you know, do you try to separate those two pretty clearly or do people kind of find it's like, oh, you know, yeah. Brian plays in a hardcore band? Like, how do you handle that?
I used to keep it very quiet for a variety of reasons. One, I don't want to be the guy that's talking about his band all the time because that guy is usually pretty lame.
Sure.
So just right off the bat, I just wouldn't really talk about it. And then also, you know, like you said, like I have a career and one I take rather seriously. So I don't want I don't want people to think that like I'm not invested in my career and my head's somewhere else and I got my head in the clouds because I do this band. You know, so I just try not to bring it up and not really, you know, advertise it. But, you know, with the internet and social media and all that, and, you know, you work in a place for a while, you eventually end up making some friends, getting friendly with people and things come out, like people know. And I've found that, you know, I used to think that just let them think whatever they want, because whatever they're thinking about it is probably better than the reality, especially like earlier on. Like, you know, if they think I'm out there playing weddings, sure, because that's probably more palatable and like, you know, digestible than like, oh, I'm playing, you know, this bar in Boston where people are beating the hell out of each other. You know, it's just easier to like to understand. But then, you know, YouTube, things are out there, and then the shows get bigger. There's footage of me doing something crazy, and it goes around. And, you know, I found that, you know, maybe it's because I'm more advanced in my career and more established in my career, but like people, like they think it's cool now. Like it's not like and again, I work in like internet startup ad tech stuff. So it is the culture is younger and a little more, you know, understanding, accepting of different things, but they think it's cool. And honestly, like I don't want to say it helped, but like, you know, sometimes when I'm like, hey, you know, I got to put in for time off, I need off, you know, this week or this Friday. And they'll be like, oh, why are you playing a show? And it's like, if that's going to help you say yes to approving this, then sure. So yeah. I've actually found, you know, and, you know, and I'm really grateful for the company I've been at for the last 10 years or so. Very, very supportive of the whole thing. I've had people, you know, come to my shows, leadership in the company have come to check it out in real life and been very supportive of the whole thing. So, you know, I've got it in a pretty healthy spot, but at first I would definitely keep it quiet. And it's also not to say that it gets any easier coming back from like, you know, amazing European festival week of shows and then coming back to, you know, the reality of emails and all that. It's still, that doesn't get any easier, but like my kind of like, this is who I am, this is part of my whole deal, that's, I'm way more confident and comfortable in that position now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, for sure. And especially too, where it's like the idea of a band, like you said, the way that people perceive it versus the reality of it is usually, I mean, you know, every time you pull your van into a, you know, oil change area and they're like, oh, what band are you in? And you're like, oh, you know, whatever. Like people think it's so much different than it actually is. And it's like, Totally. Okay. Like you said, if you feel like whatever perception of like me traveling on private jets to go play shows, like, okay, that's what you think.
It's like, trust me, like what I'm doing is like arguably more work than I do at here in terms of like keeping the show on the road and getting there on time and setting shit up and whatever. Like it's, you know, it's far from a vacation, although extremely fun and validating and rewarding. Like it's a lot of work too.
Right, exactly. It's like, listen, you're, you know, week off in Cabo or whatever, like that's a whole different ball game than, you know, me playing three shows with sweaty people in sweaty rooms. Like yeah. This is a whole different ball game here.
Yeah, actually, over the pandemic, like I took my girlfriend and I went down to Florida for a week and I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, this might be the first like legit vacation I've taken in 8 years or something like that, because I was always so, you know, I would hoard my PTO and vacation time to dedicate to band stuff, which again is like a lot of work and a lot of obligation and responsibility, and you're on somebody else's schedule. That like I don't think I'd really taken a legit vacation where I had actually nothing to do somewhere else for a while until like last year.
Right. Oh, dude, it's such a weird concept when like you travel for pleasure, just because we've never been used to that as dumb hardcore kids. And so it's like, yeah. Oh, you can like go somewhere and see like more than three blocks outside of wherever venue you're playing.
Right. And like the worst part of town, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Nothing where you actually be able to see a site except like maybe get excited about a cool coffee shop.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, I really appreciate you letting me nerd out about all of these things inside your brain, because I knew it was going to be a good one. So,
of course, man. And like I said, I'm a fan of the show. I particularly look forward to the end of year or the year end list show that you do.
Yes.
with Jeremy and Joey.
Yes.
So I was excited to do this, man. I love hearing people's origin stories. I love nerding out on this stuff. Like I said, it's like one of the only things I actually give a shit about and have a very good memory of. When I can't remember most other things, I can remember things like Redwood Records and Dearly Departed.
Dude, that is honestly, I was like, I'm going to be able to bring this up to Brian and we're just going to be able to talk about this. We could probably just do our own, like,
for it, man. I'm here for it.
Just do our own Long Island buried treasures.
Yeah, I got more. I got plenty more where that came from, believe me.
Hey, well, let me just end you with this. How about, do you remember that band A Day in the Life?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Of course.
X Mind Over Matter. That was George Ezra's band after Mind Over Matter.
That was my very first show with Taken ever. They headlined the Showcase Theater here in Southern California, and we were very excited to. We didn't even really know who they were, but it was they played Adamantium was opening, so we were excited about that. But yeah, so that's good. I appreciate that connection there.
Yeah, actually, I gotta mention it. I saw Taken on Long Island at Hungarian Hall in Ronkonkoma.
Absolutely. That's
yeah. Because I know you still look with a very infant stage of Stray from the Path also.
Dude, I can't tell you how many Long Island heads that went to that show that were just like, oh, dude, yeah, I saw, you know, you with Stray from the Path when they were like absolutely awful, an awful band.
And Stray from the Path had a like, sure, sonically it sounded very different than the band does today, but like they were like their own thing on Long Island, and like Soldiers got to play with them a lot, and they brought out, they had beyond like Long Island's pride, like their like town of like Selden and Center Reach and Newfield High School repped so hard for Stray from the Path at the time that they had like their own scene, like within a scene. And it's fucking amazing that they're still doing it and at the level they are today. And I know Tom's a friend of the show too. So that was a lot of people were at that show that are still around today.
Oh boy, wasn't that fun with Mr. Brian? Hopefully you were able to, learn a little bit more about lacrosse and or the Mount Rushmore of Long Island hardcore. I really just used that as an excuse to talk about Inside for like 10 minutes, which we did. It was great. So thank you very much, Brian. Thank you very much to his publicist, Tim, for helping set this up, because even though Brian and I are friends, anytime you can go through official channels and make everybody look great, then why don't we do that? So next week, I have my final episode from the LDB Fest, where I recorded a bunch of live podcasts there. And this one is special because it is Mark from Fuming Mouth, who, for those of you that have maybe not been paying attention, Mark went through a battle with cancer and he has come out on the other side. I know they technically don't say in remission, but he's a very healthy lad as of right now. And through the support of many, many people on the internet and people who are fans of his band and people maybe who don't really necessarily even like his band, were donating to the cause and be able to help cover his medical bills. And Mark was such a great chat. This one deserves to kind of stand on its own. Not to say that anytime I combine live chats, it doesn't mean that they are not good, but Mark's was definitely a little more in depth, so to speak. But that's what we got next week. Mark from Fuming Mouth at live at LDB Fest. And if you hear this and you are getting ready to go to the Outbreak Festival, come say what's up. I would love to say hi to you. So until then, please be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection, and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.